she wanted to be. She said, baby, can't you see? I wanna be famous, a star of the screen.
Hard to interrupt the Beatles.
Just wait for this part.
Here it comes. Here it comes.
Baby, you can drive my car.
Or can you? John Plutz joins us right now. John is a technology reporter and blogger at Crane Chicago Business, and he did something very, very, very brave. How are you, John?
Doing well. How are you?
All right. I got to tell you this, John. Nice to meet you, first and foremost. We have talked about these fully autonomous cars, self-driving. I don't know who's that excited about it other than technology people. It's scary. I would not do it. You're a brave man.
I'm not that brave.
There was a driver
behind the wheel.
So oh, like there was.
Even though his hands were not on the wheel.
All right.
So just in case, if something goes wrong, somebody's up there, driver.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that's probably really where we're
Who
at.
Decided that would be the case? Was that your decision? Was it the car's decision? Who decided that?
Oh, it was theirs.
Yeah.
The technology exists to have, you know, fully autonomous vehicles, and they're actually being tested. This was semi-autonomous because the people who were driving us around, the folks at HERE, which used to be called Navtech, digital mapping company here in Chicago, they're providing the maps for this, for autonomous vehicles, and they wanted to show off the maps, and you know, this is how we keep the car, going where it's supposed to go. Which is actually not an insignificant problem.
Would you have been the same level of okay with this if there was no safety driver in place? If it was just a car pulled up, there's nobody in there but you, and it took you for a ride, would you have been just as brave or not as brave?
You would have never returned, John.
Not sure. Don't think so. I think that's really going to take some time for people to get comfortable with. And that may be one of the biggest challenges. I mean, the technology... It looks like they've solved that problem in terms of can we make this do what we think we want it to do, but man, the adoption, the change in behavior among humans, I think is actually probably going to be the more significant challenge for this over time.
All right. So, did the driver ever have to intervene at any point?
Yes, by design, the way they had things set up. So it was able to change lanes. You know, he hit the turn signal, car moved over just fine. When they got off the expressway and, you know, hit the exit, and it's one of those not uncommon scenarios on the Kennedy and elsewhere where you have an on-ramp and an off-ramp very, very close together. And he got off and you know, we came back around. I'm pretty confident that the vehicle could probably handle that scenario just fine. They've been testing cars in fully autonomous mode for a couple of years, but it reminds you of just how much is going on in what, you know, we all think of as sort of a no-brainer driving a car. You get behind the wheel, you do what you do, you know, people are texting and, you know, putting on makeup and doing a ton of other things.
What, were you behind me today? Because that's what I was doing. I'm kidding.
We're everywhere. But that's what it made me realize more than anything.
What about stop signs and stuff? I know you were on the Kennedy, but you said you got you exited and then re-entered. What about stop signs? What about stoplights? What if there's a pedestrian walking by?
Well, there was an incident in Arizona, obviously, with a pedestrian that ended badly. For the most part, those are not really the big problems. You know, they've the onboard cameras that have been around for quite a while, as well as a version of basically radar using a laser called LiDAR. That technology has been around, so that's really, really sophisticated. Basically, it's really sophisticated cruise control. So keeping you from running into other things, stopping, doesn't really seem to be the issue. It's those random supposedly never events. And that's what really struck me as I'm sitting in the passenger seat and, we're getting off the expressway. Now, he's got control, but there's a driver, you know, in front of us that moves across in front of us. You know, you've got crossing traffic. And it wasn't somebody doing anything crazy, you know, zipping across at 80 miles an hour. But you realize all the things that you're asking a computer to do, all the variables, and you just it hits you like just exactly how much that technology is going to have to contend with. And I think that's probably the thing that gave me more pause than the guy sitting next to me with his hands on his, you know, on his lap, just, you know, cruising along.
John, you mentioned that situation in Arizona from a couple of years ago where there was a pedestrian who got hit. And I think they ruled that it was the pedestrian's fault in that incident, right? Do you remember?
Yeah, it's a situation where I think a person was maybe carrying a bike across the street or something.
Right.
You know, at night, walks across the street in the middle of the street. But that's not, you know, that is the thing that you have to contend with. It's the rules of the road are fine, and computers are very good if you give them rules at following rules. It's all of the exceptions to the rule.
Yeah.
And all of us who walk, you know, particularly in a place like Chicago where you walk, drive, bike, whatever, you realize that, you know, there's just a ton of things going on. And how do you account for all of those things? And I think that's what they're wrestling with. I think that's what's going to take a long time. I think the regulation is actually going to take the evolution of the regulatory environment is going to take a lot more time than the actual technology development.
The route I take into work every day, I drive along Clark, and there's parts of Clark that has bike lanes and there's parts that don't. And on a warm day when there's dozens of bikers all swerving in and out of traffic, I always think to myself, I get that it's a computer, but I don't know how it could react fast enough to all the things happening, as you said, kind of from every direction, you know?
I don't know either. I mean, the LiDAR and the camera technology is pretty darn good, and they're doing a lot of controlled tests in places like Pittsburgh, San Francisco, and Arizona, you know, where they're testing this in live environments. But, you know, what I've always told people is autonomous driverless cars do not happen in this country until it works and is foolproof at 4 o'clock on a Friday on the Kennedy and bumper-to-bumper traffic.
Yeah.
When were you on the Kennedy? Was it rush hour?
It was tail end of rush hour. It was about 9 o'clock. There was plenty of traffic out there, and you know the car did fine. And I think, you know, I think the more I look at this, it's probably less of a future in which you have the driverless pod that, you know, rolls up and you get in and there's no steering wheel, there's no nothing, and off you go. I think it's going to be less the Jetsons and much more you're going to have what they call highly assisted driving, which is what's coming out now. You've got a level of vehicles coming in a year or so, and that's what this was designed to show, where it will be hands-off. You'll be able to be in the vehicle hands-off and it'll cruise, you know, down the interstate. I think that's really what you're going to end up with. That'll be the next big step, where you just have this really great cruise control, and it eliminates a lot of the driver errors, you know, people falling asleep behind the wheel, impaired driving.
I think
that's what you're going to see.
Those blind spot indicators on the new cars are like the best things ever invented.
Yeah. Yep.
I still shoulder check, because if you had a car prior to this, I don't think you should get out of the habit. But that's amazing. When parking, you can have the parking sensor or backing up. So already there are definitely some gadgets on your car that help you. But
I had that, Wendy. I test drove a Jeep before I bought the one I bought that had that. I think they call it parking assistance, where it parallel parks for you. And I was nervous. I never let it do that.
I'm just saying, if you're backing up, there's like if you're getting too close to a car when you're parking, it'll beep.
Right.
There's no way I would let a car park for me, because as I've been told, you know, and you learn how to parallel park, you drive past the space and back into it. They do it from the front.
It's done a little bit differently than we were taught. Yeah.
But your kids will.
Right.
That's
without a doubt.
It's all going to be, you know, this is all
it's
mainly
weird.
A human behavior exercise.
John, you're okay on time, right? We can take a quick break and talk more.
Absolutely.
John Plutz is our guest, technology reporter and blogger at Crane Chicago Business. He took a ride in one of those driverless cars. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're chatting with John Plutz, technology reporter and blogger over at Crane's Chicago Business. We're talking about what do I call it? It isn't really a driverless car. How do you describe? So a semi-autonomous car?
Yeah, that's pretty much where we're at.
All right. And John was on the Kennedy. A couple of questions. I was thinking about it. It was dumping rain last night where my windshield wipers weren't even really helping that much. Sometimes we have a lot of snow on the roadway. How will these types of cars navigate those situations?
They'll do it well, actually. They may do it better than us.
Really?
Yeah.
Turn into the curve, you know, into the swerve or
right.
whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Do these cars flash their brights? How do they flip someone off when when they've been cut off?
That'll be fun.
That'll be the best part.
That may be the most interesting technology.
John, this will be the darkest question you get all day. Couldn't somebody potentially hack into the system by which these cars use?
Perhaps. I don't think anything's unhackable. And that is probably one of the biggest regulatory questions. And that's true with any technology you've got now, whether that's defense technology, the electric grid, take your pick, City Hall. I mean, look at the various cities that have basically been held up with ransomware.
Mm-hmm.
That's always a huge concern. And that's something that the auto industry has actually been wrestling with for a few years. There was a famous incident a few years back when, somebody took control of a Jeep. Just to show that it could be done. And so, yeah, that's going to be a big, big question mark.
How do you think this will affect insurance on what your insurance rate is?
Could be good, could be bad, depends on what kind of driver you are. I think you're already seeing that, there's been a tremendous amount of activity. If you look at where some of the biggest amounts of money and effort have been spent in tech in the last few years, it is in insurance because, like anything else, the technology allows personalization. So I can serve up an ad to you on Facebook that is personalized based on what you buy, where you go, where you live,
mm-hmm.
how old you are.
Mm-hmm.
Insurers want to do the same thing. These are the original big data geeks. They were doing the actuaries were doing this before it was cool and before it had a name, where you're taking in all the data and you say, well, based on what we know, people who live in this part of the country or are this age, this is what the traffic, this is the amount that they get into accidents, all kinds of stuff, right? That's how they set rates. Well, for several years, they've been kind of enticing people, saying, hey, we'll give you a discount on your rates if you put this dongle in your car
mm-hmm.
that allows us to collect data real time or at least collect data on how you drive. And we're going to base the price of your insurance on how well or how poorly you drive. And, people who are a little heavy with their right foot probably don't like that very much. And other mm-hmm. people who think, hey, man, I'm a safe driver. Well, now you're going to get a chance to prove it. And if you really are a safe driver, you're going to pay less. So I think the liability issue that the industry is wrestling with, which this was the other thing that was really frightening, being in the car when the software guy turns around and says, oh, yeah. He said, when we go to hands-off mode, and I'm like, okay, yeah, no big mm-hmm. deal. He's like, at that point, the car is now liable. The driver is not liable.
Oh.
And they are wrestling with that in Washington. They're wrestling with that in Europe. And they have not yet answered that question. That will change rates. My sense is, given, sort of the wide variation you have of drivers, I mean, even people who are in an accident, every other week, it seems, and are horrible drivers, like, they're going to pay a lot more. Other people are going to pay less. And you got to believe, unless this technology, if it's really a disaster, that you're going to see some rates probably long-term level out a little bit and drop, and maybe that's less of an expense.
Right, right, right.
Here's where I see a problem. Is there any way to override the system? Because when my husband is driving, a lot of times I'm like, no, take this route. You're braking too toughly. I'm kind of a backseat driver.
Is there a bickering couple mode, Sean, that they have?
Is there a way to override the system to say, take the other route?
I have no idea.
I've stumped you, sorry.
I presume that they're going to have to deal with that, because that is key to how autonomous vehicles work. You have to tell it where you're going.
Yeah.
Right.
It's based on, I'm going from point A to point B, and it will pick the route. And because it's picked the route, it has the map and the data that tells it, hey, it's two-way traffic here. It's one-way traffic here. By the way, this is a 30-mile-an-hour zone, or this is a no-truck zone. Like, it's amazing the amount of data that they have to pull together just to pick a route depending on the vehicle. And, you know, we get in a car, we get off the exit, and we go where we go without thinking of any of that stuff.
John, I've mentioned this before. With my GPS system, when I'm on lower Wacker, it's always incorrect because it's reading upper Wacker, and it'll tell me to make turns into what is a brick wall. It's done that every time.
Well, you just can't get a signal when it's below ground like that, right?
I get a signal, but it reads upper Wacker when I'm on lower. Oh. So my fear is, if that was the same technology that was telling the car where to go and not me, that the car would listen to it and then drive into the wall.
That the car would be responsible.
Oh,
just wear your seatbelt.
I'll take solace in that. It's not my fault.
I do hope that they figure out the distinction between upper and lower. But the way they have described it is the map that you and I see on our phones or the in-dash map is nothing like the map that the car actually uses, which is tens to hundreds of times. More detailed.
Yeah.
They're talking about going from we know where we are in the world and on the street by a factor of several feet to a factor of several centimeters. And so, it's going to have to contend with things like that because that's not okay.
Right.
If the car is driving and it's got a map that can't distinguish between upper and lower.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
When are they looking at this realistically being a thing?
Tomorrow.
Is it tomorrow? I hope it's not tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
When?
Coming to a street near you. The guesses are all over the map. One of the points in the story the other day, which was kind of entertaining, was the guy who's neck deep in this thing. It's like, just a few years ago, people were saying, 2019 is going to be the year. We're going to have semi-autonomous vehicles at some level in 2020. So I think realistically, my guess would be it'd be a decade before you'd actually see, true driverless vehicles on the road anywhere. And my guess is, that's going to happen with either trucks, long-haul over-the-road trucks or cabs or, buses or trains or something like that first.
Yeah,
where you have predictable routes, controlled, that makes a whole lot more sense. I think as a man, driverless pod in your neighbor's driveway.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that's not happening anytime soon.
All right, good.
I'm just thinking, sometimes,
if your neighbor's a bad driver.
If you're going somewhere and you want to have a cocktail and you're in the back seat, I wonder how that's going to work, too, because I'm not driving. So.
Right.
Again, once you're not at the wheel, I guess the car is liable.
Yep.
That's an area, frankly, I think that you might see some real benefits. It's that inattentive driving, people falling asleep at the wheel, people being impaired for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It may be preventing a whole bunch of what we think of as preventable crashes than having, everybody being whizzed around. By a driverless vehicle, I think it's much more this just really good, highly assisted, saving you from yourself sort of thing. It's a little like anti-lock brakes, right?
Yeah.
When that first came around, people were like, what? And I distinctly remember when this first came out, I was covering the police beat. And after they racked up about 8 brand new squad cars, they closed down a road for about 3 hours one night and ran every cop through driver's testing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time they had gotten cars with anti-lock brakes.
Mm-hmm.
And what you were trained to do in a panic stop was
pump the brakes.
Pump the brakes defeats anti-locks.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing, right? But now, would you buy a vehicle without anti-lock brakes?
Nope.
I'm not even sure you can buy one.
They don't make them, yeah.
Yep.
John, we have to run. We are short on time here. It was really interesting talking to you about this. And keep us posted if you do a second trip on this or just one that has no person there, because we'd like to talk to you if you live.
Wow.
Here's hoping I come back.
Our fingers are crossed for you, John. Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
The still breathing John Pletz, technology reporter and blogger over at Crane Chicago
Business.
Thanks, John. We'll take a break and get you some news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.